Perek Dalet. Perek Dalet is a reference to the Holocaust. Okay, there's a real, real major reference to the Holocaust, something very frightening. We learn Navi because Navi, the words of the theme, in the words of the theme, there are many layers of interpretation. And the words of the Nevi'im, they saw things, there's no question about it, they saw things referring to later generations, 2,000 years ahead, even more. And I think over here there's a very clear example. Let's start again with Perek Dalet, Pasuk Aleph, on page 298. Perek Dalet, Pasuk Aleph, Shimu Hadavar Hazeh, Parois HaBashan. The Parois, the cows of the Bashan. And we'll see this refers, according to most of the commentaries, the women. It's a musr against women. Wow. Women, you know, people, it's not so simple over here to have a whole section devoted to Noshem. We're calling here, according to many, the parois of Bashan were the wives of people living in the time of Amos who influenced their husbands, demanded from their husbands wealth, items to enjoy, and when their husbands could not keep up with the demands of their wife, they did not have the money to purchase the items that their wives wanted, they had no choice but to go out and steal money in order to support their wives. Someone had told me a vart. Ish ki yikach ish, and maybe you help me with this vart. Ish ki yikach isha chadasha. Lo yetze batzava. Noki yihye lebesoy. So someone told me a nasty vart. A man marries an isha chadasha, a woman who always likes the latest, the newest, the latest and the greatest. So it says lo yetze batzava. I forgot how that part goes. Noki yihye lebesoy. He'll be cleaned out. All his money will go.
How a woman can make a man a millionaire?
How?
If he's a billionaire.
Ah, okay. She's a billionaire. So what, how is the Virgo? Lo yetze bat sova. He should not go out bat sova. I forgot how it goes. I have to ask. I know who told me the word. I have to ask him again what it means. Okay, so here this is a musar addressed to Noshim. The influence, the bad influence a woman can have over her husband. That is one interpretation. We'll see, but Targum does not say that. The Targum says, we're talking over here, it's a musar directed directly against the super rich. I'm sorry, you're right? I'm sorry, I forgot. I'm correct. I forgot to make a lot of it. Okay, this is a musar directed against the super rich. Most of the words of Mus that we learned is directed against the Hamoinam, the common man. The common man, nothing unique about the rich, the poor. It's a Musr against the Kagan. You come into a community, everyone is guilty. Here we are addressing either the super rich or we are addressing the Noshim. So what does the Navi say? Asher Bahar Shaimroid. They are guilty of extortion, oppression, dalim, the poor. They crush evyonim. We learned yesterday, we discussed a little bit about the difference between the word dalim and the word evyonim. We're not going to do it again. They say to their masters, bring wealth, bring good drink, good drink. Vinishtem, let us drink, let us enjoy partake of the excellent drink. Let's see them first, the Mitsudos David, on page 298, on the bottom, Perek Dalet, Pasik Aleph, right in the middle, Paras Abashan. Who are the Paras Abashan? According to the Mitsudos, these are the wives, the women. The Al Ki Hoyu Mis Angois Ushmenois, they were very large. Shmenois, they were very fat. May Roiv Kol, from the abundance of everything, Kim Shilom El Haparois Horois Baboshan. Boshan is the name of a place. And this was the best pasture land in the entire Eretz Yisrael, from where the Mirish Shomain, the Shehim Shmenois Ubriois Basar, they are very heavy, they are very fat. In time of Chazal, it's no secret that being today, the thinner you are, the more glamorous in society it's considered to be glamorous to be a stick, to be emaciated. But in Avi, that's not the way it was. You know, that's not the way it was in ancient times. In ancient times, it appears that a person was a bit on the heavy side. That was a sign of beauty. It's hard for us to relate to this today. Mm. Okay, this blows our minds.
You ever hear of the artist Rubens?
No.
Yeah.
It's all right, don't worry. It's okay, don't worry. No harm done. No harm done. So the paros abbas, so the notion that it appears in ancient times women and men that were a bit on the heavy side, it was viewed as a mila. It was a sign of health. Even in Europe, not so long ago, it seems it was a sign of health.
The early 1900s, it was still.
Yeah, the fiddler on the roof, proper double chick. He would want his wife to have a proper double.
Have a double double chin.
Yeah. It was considered healthier.
Right. So this is what it says over here. It says over here that's exactly what it says in Mitzudos David, is that these noshim they were like the paros of Bashan, meaning that they were very plump. And that was considered to be a sign of aristocracy. And let's go further. And what are they guilty of? With that wealth comes the need to maintain that wealth by they have high maintenance. High maintenance means there's going to be a very big bill each month. And who's going to pay the bill? The husband. Where is the husband going to get the money from? Well, if you can't get it honestly, you do whatever it takes to make sure you bring home the dough. They're not guilty of extortion with their bare hands. They don't go out to the crossroads and kill people. But instead, what do they do? They say to their husbands, bring us home, make sure, don't come home unless you bring home a bottle of wine, a good bottle of wine. They don't have the money. So what do? So you steal a little bit. You cheat. Oishkim hadalim, you take advantage. Tishushay hakoyach, the weak and the feeble. V'im yamdu negdam roitzitzimoysam, if they get caught, then they just smash the skulls of these innocent people. Beridui umalkos, they beat them, they hit them. Imkein ho'oishak v'ratzitza bo alideh hanoshim chilu yasum hein, we're blaming the women. The women are making demands upon the men that the men cannot keep. And the men, in order just to keep them quiet, to keep them happy, they will resort to do anything. And this is obviously very true in all societies, not just unfortunately in our society, but this is a way of life. And the Navi is giving Musar, meaning if he's giving us the Musar from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, it's within the power, our power, to suppress this behavior. And where does it all start? Grassroots. It all starts in the world of chinuch, when the children are young, in the elementary schools. That's where all the values of life all begin. And Baruch, I think to a certain degree, in certain societies, certain segments of the Jewish, certain segments, you know, the Beis Yaakovs, they're definitely more successful in Musa than the yeshivas giving Musa to the boys. And more often than not, the girls, they I mean, not all the time, but very often you see the girls, they're at least when they're young, they're not interested in all of these very expensive lifestyle. And that is, they've listened to the words of Amos. Let's go further. This is the Mitzudos. Let's take a look at Rashi. Rashi says, who is the base, who is the Paros HaBashan? He gives two interpretations. First, he says, Neshei HaSorim, the women, the HaSegonim, the wives of the Sodim, the Hasiganim, the officers. These are the people that are obviously very wealthy. The Yonasan does not go down that path. The Yonasan ben Uziel, is this Yonasan ben Uziel, this Targum? It's not so simple. If it is Yonasan ben Uziel, it's interesting. Yonasan ben Uziel was not married. As far as I know, he did not marry. He did not have children. So he does not say it refers to Noshim. He did not know firsthand what it means. Who could say such? How can I say such a terrible thing? But Yonasan ben Uziel, I believe, was not married, and he does not say it means the Noshim, but he says, Tirgem, Atirei Nichsaya, the wealthy, makes no mention that the Parois HaBashan are women. He says that the Musar here is directed against against the wealthy individuals of society who, in order to maintain their lifestyle, have no choice but to resort to extortion, theft, and oppression, v'chulu v'chulu. You know, it's not. You know why I say it's not nice? Everyone, Ari Kalis, not here. Ari Kalis, one of the biggest talmidim. He's in Florida now. The biggest talmidim, Rav Simcha Wasserman. Rav Simcha Wasserman. Rav Elchanan Wasserman's son. And Rachmana Litzlan, he did not have children. Yet he gave many popular classes on Chinuch Habonim. I told you this many times, and parenting techniques in raising children. So someone had the chutzpah, the awesome, awesome chutzpah, to say to him, Rebbe, why do you give us classes on raising children, chinuch habanim, when you don't have children? So what do you know from this? If you have no experience, you shouldn't talk without experience. Could you imagine the chutzpah to say that to a person?
It may
doesn't
be true, but you don't say it.
Exactly. Most of life is like that. Most of life is maybe true. I mean, it's just mind-boggling. It's mind-boggling. Someone have the chutzpah to say that to a person. It's this all cited in the book. In the book, Rav Simcha Speaks. I think it's Rav Simcha Speaks. Article put out a book like at least 20 years ago. A short biography of Rav Simcha Wasserman. They had a very big akaras hatoyf to Rav Simcha Wasserman because he... When Rav Meir Zlotowitz put out the first art scroll product, Megillas Esther, yeah. So they put people bought a few copies, and then a bookstore bought 10 copies. They put an order the next day for when it sold out in 2 minutes. They put an order for another 100 copies, but Rav Simcha Wasserman, he put in an order I think for 1,000 copies, some astronomical number of copies. He right away saw. He was like one of the first people to see, wow, this is sensational. And he saw Ezer Chochem Horoyes and Noilat, and he gave Meir Zlotowitz, this is one of the other article about Zlotowitz, enormous chizik by investing in art scroll. He ordered from them to distribute, I don't know where he got the money from, to distribute Rav Simcha, I think Rav Simcha, the Megillas Esther. So Meir Zlotowitz had a very close relationship with Rav Simcha Wasserman. He spent a good part of his life, I think, in Los Angeles, if I'm not mistaken. Rav Simcha Wasserman. Yeah. So he gave an amazing answer, which always rings in my head. I can't get this out of my head. He says, you're right. I don't have children, but I still have experience because I watched my parents raise me. So I'm also part of the experience. My parents, Rav Elchanan Wasserman, you know, me God alone, Rav Elchanan Wasserman, his greatness is not to be believed, is where he knew, he basically came to America to raise money, the war broke out, he knew without a shadow of a doubt that going back to Baranovich, going back, he would be killed. And he said, and in America they were begging him, don't go back, what are you going back for, are you going back to die? So he said, yeah, it's the right thing to do. My Talmidim are there, my people are there, they're trapped. They're not able to escape. I belong with them. I have to be there with them at this time. And he went back from America, not just, you know, from the safety of America, he went back to be with his Talmidim. You know, we're talking about over here. And from all of the stories, it's amazing the Hashgacha, when they took them out to be killed. So he asked the Nazis, give me 2 minutes before you kill us. And they gave him 2 minutes. And he told them, we are Korbanos. And there's a principle in Kachim that thought is critical. The thought the owner has when the Korban is being offered has a very significant difference in the validity. In the acceptability of the carbon, there's a halacha of pigol, machshava chutz lezman chutz lemekaymai, and he was mechazek his talmidim. There were eyewitnesses, people who hid and saw this, that before they kill us, we should be metaher our thoughts, our machshavos as we're being killed, and in that schus you don't even begin to realize in that schus. Success, the Klal Yisrael will sprout forth in America. And he spoke from experience because he was in America. He came to America to raise money. He was in America. I actually know someone in my father's shul, one of the big balabat, my father's shul, I think his name is Dr. Tarragon, Dr. Herbert Tarragon. He has very famous children. You even gave me an article last week, or a mayor from his son, Moshe Tarragon. Moshe Tarragon is a big Talmud Chacham in Gush Etzion, and he has another son. The other son is Ruvain. He's in Yeshivat HaKotel. The Yeshivat HaKotel, he's a very, very big Rashiva, and his daughter-in-law of Chulu. So his father was a Rav. His father was a Rav.
The one you were talking about was a dentist.
Herbie Tarragon is, but who's Herbie's father? They lived in Baltimore. And Rebbe Chanan came to, when the Chanan came to America, where did they stay? They stayed in his home, in the Tarragon home in Baltimore. He went to different places, but when he was in Baltimore, he stayed for an extended period of time in the home of the Tarragons. And he told me that he remembers his father, he sat him at the head of the table, and he gave him a very big bracha. He was a little boy then, Herbie Tarragon. And like he had a lot of hakaras hatov to Herbie Tarragon's father for hosting him in very difficult times. And he gave him a very warm bracha. The last time he left, Herbie Tarragon, Rabbi Chanan gave him a bracha. He gave him a bracha, and obviously it did pretty good. the bracha was chal. He has excellent children. So interesting. But Rabbi Chanan, it's a fascinating idea is that his son, that he said to him, Rabbi Simcha says, "You're right. I don't have children, but I watched my parents raise me. So I know firsthand what it means chinuch habanim, and I am a person who's qualified to teach you about chinuch habanim." So here, it's interesting, Rabbi Yonah Simon Uziel, I don't know if we know for sure if he was married or not. I don't know if we know for sure if he has children or not. That's what they say. They say that he was not married, and he didn't have children. And people go to his kevah, they supposedly know where he's buried in Meron. Is that correct? Supposedly, they know where he's buried. Where they know he's buried in Meron, and people go to his kever. They go to his kever. They say there's a school of a shaduchim by going to his kever, and that's questionable. People, there's no source for that, and people say it's a mistake. They used to go to Rashbi, and then there were times when the kever Rashbi or Amuka, it was not available. It was closed off, so they started going as there was no other place to go. So they went to Rabbi Yonasan ben Uziel. Okay, whatever that is, but I just find it to be very interesting here. There is, I think, I believe, so that he was not married. And here we have a pasuk of Paras HaBoshon, and all of the commentators on the page mention the Paras HaBoshon are referred to Nashim, the wives who forced their husbands to spend a lot of money. And Yonasan ben Uziel does not make mention of Noshen. Yonasan ben Uziel says the Musar is being directed against the super rich of the Jewish people, not the women. That's all he says. The Atirei Nischaya, the wealthy, the people who are wealthy with assets.
You
don't have a wife, children. You cannot be a dying, you have to have children.
Even the Gemara has the problem if you are very old also.
A Zakein, right? Lose the sensitivity.
Also, of course, it's been so long since he had children.
You don't have that sense. It's definitely true. In life, it's all about experience. If you don't have experience, it's like someone I know, he had vertigo. So I once had, when I was a child, I used to have spouts of vertigo. I got it once a little bit later on. If you don't know what it did not, right, no one should know from this. If you never experienced it, there's no way in the world you can describe to another person what it feels like. It's not possible. Did anyone ever have a spout of vertigo?
My mother-in-law has it.
An intense spout? You had it. You can't describe it to someone. There are no words you can use to describe what it feels like. It's a word. That's a light word, not just spinning. There's sometimes it comes with an intensity. There's a certain sensation. It's horrible. It's just so horrible. I don't even really know where it comes. Like a virus. You have a virus sometimes. But it's like you can't describe in words to a person what you feel like unless you've had that experience. And that's true with everything. Everything in life is true like that. If you don't experience it, you really don't know what it's like. Next section. Let's take a look over here at the Radak, Pasuk Aleph, Shimu Parsa Boshan, Boshan Humokam Shmirish Shamein Dabehemos Vahorois Bosh Shmeinois Vitoivois. They're juicy. They're nice and fat and juicy. You can imagine that must have cost a pound. What's the most expensive meat in pomegranate? In Moishu, they sell some very expensive meat. How much? How much a pound? How much a pound?
Over $40 a pound.
No, this is much more expensive than that.
If you want Kobe beef,
I heard there's meat for over $100 a pound.
Yeah, that's
outrageous. They feed it.
You can't get it in most places.
They feed the animals beer, a diet of beer. And they massage the animals. What else do they do? These like crazy things.
You can see those animals every Shabbos.
And they have also, what do you call it, there's such a concept of chickens.
Yeah.
Soft music to chickens.
Soft music.
The eggs are better quality eggs. I mean, I'm done.
Who knows?
With that.
Okay.
Done.
Whatever it is, it is. Obviously, this was the best of the best. The wives. So the Radak clearly learns like the parish of the Mitsudos, that approach. The wives of the kings Asarim Hagadolim Leporoi Saboshan Lefi, because Shehein Balois Tanug, they enjoy life. Vehein Shemenois Viafois. Okay, those two words do not go together. It's an oxymoron. Today, in the 21st century, no way. No way, Jose, will you put those two words together. Shemenois viyafais. You got
to
be...
It's changing, by the way. It is coming back to that.
Not that I know of.
No,
not that I'm aware of, yeah.
Yeah, a lot of advertising.
That's because of discrimination. That's because of discrimination.
Right.
There's laws of discrimination. It used to be that certain airlines, to be a stewardess on an airline, you couldn't weigh all this. So there were suits, mama lawsuits you have to be glamorous to be a stewardess on an airplane, and they lost. A lot of these airlines were under an enormous amount of pressure that you don't have to be glamorous to be a stewardess on an airplane.
Whatever the reason that they're doing it, they are glamorizing it. It doesn't matter their motive. There's a motive, but they're glamorizing that.
By advertising and other ways.
It's a marketing thing. Because they're appealing. They're appealing to a market.
As it goes, a year or two or three.
If you would ask these women, what would you rather be, the way you are, or different? They would all say you're different. They would all say not the way they are.
Full size models.
Okay, whatever this is, let's not go here. Everybody sigh. This is not for the Koilo people. This is not a topic of discussion for Koilo and Goliath. Okay, everybody sigh. This is not a conversation that belongs in the Beis Medrash. Excuse me, I went a little too far here. Weiter. Ha'oishkois Stalin. Everybody sigh. Ha'oishkois Stalin. They oppress the poor. Now here's the key word. Misabebois. They don't do it directly. These Noshim who are have high maintenance, they are misabebois. They are the cause. They cause the instigators. They have a lifestyle and they drive their husbands crazy, and they will make sure their husbands understand they don't walk in the home unless they provide what these women need. So they are the cause of the Oishek and the Merutza. They say to their husbands, to their masters, that's also an oxymoron. The women over here, they're calling the shots. And they're calling their husband their masters. Should say they say to their servants, is a husband a master or is a husband an evet? You know the vart. A chasan is doime lemelech. It's only doime. Who's the real melech? A bachor. A bachor. A non-married man. No one tells them what to do, what to eat, where to go, what kind of job to get, how to dress, how to behave. You do whatever you want. Oh, you're a chassan. Oh, you're no longer a melech. You're doime. You're still free. You go home every night. You don't have a wife. But you know, you have already someone to report to. During the tekufa of a chassan, you get engaged, you get married, you're doimeh, not a melech. And then after shana rishayna, you're an eved.
It's a medrash koelis.
What?
This is the medrash on medrash rabbah on koelis.
Yeah, it says this.
It talks about it at different stages of your life, what you become.
Smach bochor b'yaldu secha.
It says when you get married, you become like a fed.
Smach bocher b'yaldu secha. The bocher is the true melech. The chosen is in a transition state. He's a doimel melech. Then a married man, watch out. But what's so fascinating over here is it says she'oim rois la'adonehem is an oxymoron. How can it be that these noshim who are the mesabibois, they are the mesabibois, they're causing their husbands to steal, to rob, extortion. They would never do this, these good b'nei Torah, these yeshivish guys, they wouldn't go in to do these type of things. It's only because their wives are driving them crazy. So the relationship is master-slave. The wife is the master and the husband is the slave. And yet the pasuk says, she'oim rois, they say la'adonehem. It doesn't make sense. It's an oxymoron. It's either it's a euphemism. It's mamish doesn't make sense. It's not. If you're my master, I'm not going to tell you what to do. I'm not going to tell you to go steal, to go rob bank in order that I should live a life of luxury. Why are you using over the word adoneim? So you have to say that it's a euphemism, or there is another key. And I'm very serious now. The word is not the correct word. Based on the context of what the mefarshim say. There is something very curious about the word she'oimrois. There is, look, if you look at the Mincha Shai, I turn the next page. On the next page, 301, because this is a very fascinating law of diktok, rule of diktok, she'oimrois la'adneim, chad min zayin mapkin olif bilishono. Kimo she'echta betilim simen kuf lamed hey. This word ha'oimrois has a makof, which means a little line, a mapok, under the aleph. You see, back on page 298, the word ha'oimrois. That's not the way you write ha'oimrois. There's not supposed to be a mapok, a line under the aleph, beneath the aleph.
Right?
What?
An accent mark.
The aleph indicates, it's called a mesek. Yeah. It's different terminology. Every one of the early commentators, that's what makes learning diktuk so difficult, is every one of the rishonim, every tekufa, there was a different vocabulary. Okay, everybody say it. Each of the rishonim had a different vocabulary describing the vowels, describing the nekudos, and here there is what we call a meseg. He calls it a mapok. It means there's a line which means give emphasis. Now, when you normally in a word, the emphasis goes on the last syllable. At times, we violate that rule and we give the emphasis where the ta'am is, the trup. The musical notice, and sometimes we have, in addition to the musical note, which is usually on the last syllable, there's also a mesek. Here is such an example where it says, which means ho'oi. Now, if there's a cholam, it's going to be a shvana, ho'oi miro, ho'o miros. There is a double emphasis. That's not the normal way. Normally, it would be only on the aleph, and that's it. Ho'oimros. It would not be ho'oimros. So obviously there's something unique. There's a violation of the rules of grammar in this word, and this is unique. He says it's one of seven times, I didn't look up what it says here in Tehillim in the Mincha Shai, I really should have, but he says this is one of seven different exceptions, unique words in Tanakh, where there is a mesek on a letter where it doesn't really belong, or the whole structure of the word. Obviously,
where it would not normally
be.
Because normally we would say ha'omros.
Right, without right, shvanoch, and that's it. So why is there? Obviously, it doesn't tell us why. I don't know why. It just goes to show that's why the Mefarshim, there's a lot going on over here. They don't actually say. If you even take the Radak, we already have an answer. Radak says they're not actually speaking words, they're living a lifestyle. And the lifestyle they live creates a pressure for the husband to keep up. We have no choice, you have to keep up with the Joneses, and we have to have, they have a summer home, we have to have a summer home. You have a yacht, we have to have a yacht. What kind of shidduch, if they find out that we travel economy to go to Eretz Yisrael to visit our daughter in seminary, what kind of shidduch are we going to get for her? We have to let the world know that we travel business class when we go 3 times a year to visit our daughter in seminary.
What about the man who's establishing the home?
Exactly. That's exactly the point over here. So that is what is so difficult about this expression, la'adonehem. If the husband doesn't believe in this nonsense, so why then is he listening to his wife? Obviously, he's the victim of abuse. Obviously. Yeah, so he's not the master. He's the slave. Ha'oimrois is a feminine with a saf. They say, la'avdehem. They say to their servants. Who is their servants? Their husbands. If their husbands are going out into the world and stealing and robbing to satisfy them, then their husbands are not their masters.
I would think that maybe when the society was at a point where
it's all for show,
husbands were able to give them everything, then things took a bad turn. The women didn't want to make that turn.
It all depends. Sometimes yes, sometimes not. I'm sure there are many situations where it's not like that. There are many situations where the husband was making ends meet, and the wife says you can't make ends meet. You got to go do something.
It's
not so clear. We don't know the details. A lot of the details are hidden from us. And whatever. But it's a good question. And part of the answer to the question is the word ha'oimrois is not your ordinary oimrois. It's a different type of amira. Everything is for show. All for show. Yeah, my husband, he's the boss. You know these type of situations where for show, I'm kafuf to das Torah, my husband, and really inside. Inside the home, it's just the opposite. You're going to do what you do, what I tell you to do. It's a very, very frightening pasuk. Here it's described as a low state in marriage, where to the world the marriage appears to be one way. To the world, the marriage appears to be that the wife la'adonehem, my husband is my master. He's my master. He's my melech. And yet, from the perish of the pasuk, it's clear as day, the husband's no master. The husband's a slave. So that's a very frightening thing to live a double life. It's bad enough to live a double life yourself. It's bad enough in your own personal life to be a faker. Okay, so what you do by yourself, it's not the way you present yourself to the world. But to have a couple, a team, a husband and wife present themselves to the world one way, and privately, it's a very different type of marriage. That's much, much worse. Because it's much worse. What? Musar. He's telling us, don't live like this. This is the whole purpose over here is, I know what you're doing. This is the Musar. Don't live a life. Don't be a faker. Don't be a hypocrite. Don't live a double life. What do you need it for? You're just going to ruin yourself. You'll live a life of agony. Yeah, that's how, yes, this is a new nevuah. We have here a new nevuah. Each nevuah is unique. Even though it appears to us, and learning through Nevi'im Achronim, it's all the same thing. Again, Musar, you know good, you be, Avo, the Zorah, Gilarai, Shvi, Chastamim. It's not true. Each section, each few psukim separated by a parsha stuma or a parsha pesucha is a unique message, something that you will not find anywhere else in the entire Tanakh. Superficially, it's all repetition, all seems the same. You're bad, you're not behaving, you're doing averos, shape up or ship out. No, each section of Nachetz Pashut is teaching you something unique. This nevuah is off the bat, you don't need to be b'chacham to see that it's unique, and that according to most of the commentators, it's being directed towards women. It's not being directed towards men. Most of the nevus that we've learned when we started today, we mentioned it speaking to the hamoinam, the common man. Sometimes the Navi speaks to the kings, the people in power. Sometimes it speaks to the kohanim. Sometimes he speaks to the false prophets. Sometimes he speaks to the Goyim. Very good. That's right. To the Goyim. Sometimes he talks about what's going to be in the middle of the Mashiach. Sometimes it's the past. Sometimes it's the present. It's general. You always have to ask yourself the question, what is unique about these few psukim, this section? Here it's easy, because you don't have it very often. We did have a little bit in Yecheskel, some of this, but Noshim, speaking to women, but it was a bit different. This is a nevuah that is directed to Noshim, to women. This is what you teach in the Beis Yaakov. Don't...
Seminary?
Yeah, obviously. This is where it's at.
These girls didn't have an education.
This is what... Maybe they did. Maybe they just got caught up in the wrong things. It's not so simple. Not everyone has... We're not to pass judgment on anyone. But this nevuah is unique that we are addressing Noshim and telling the Noshim, the Isha's, the Keres Abayis, has enormous influence on the behavior of her husband. Instead of you, what you should be doing is to be influencing your husband to spend more time learning, davening, and making yourself into a better father for your children. And instead, what are the Noshim here doing? They're living a life of luxury. They're shopping the entire day, and they can't afford to pay the bills. And they tell their husband, "Don't go sit and learn. Don't go to a night sit to a shir at night. Get a second job. Go take on do some moonlighting, do whatever you're going to do to bring home some more money so we can have a nicer home. We can have a better car." So, and the husband doesn't want. But the husband doesn't want to fight with his wife. And this is what he's telling us. He's way ahead of his time, right? I mean, you can see this all the time. Here and there, all depends. But this is the message. And here, if you read very carefully between the words, there's something very, very, very bizarre. Ha'oimrois, the women, they say to their husbands, la adonehem, to their masters, who's the master, their husbands, havia, bring the wealth, the nishta we will enjoy. And the husbands have no choice but to listen, even though the husbands don't want to listen. So why then are they being called adonehem? Why are they being called their masters? It's all a show. It's all a world of make-believe. To the world, My husband, I'm kafuf to whatever he says. Das Torah, the isha, a kol kavuda bas melech penima. But at home, who calls the shots? The wife calls the shots. I once went to babysitting somewhere. So I was talking to the kids, and the kid says to me, even though my father is a little teeny pipsqueak, says to me, that was bad. Even though my father, he's taller than my mother, but my mother is in charge. To a child, height represents power. So his father's a giant, and his mother, you know, is average. Father's 6'2", and the wife is 5'5", whatever, 5'6", whatever. My father, he's tall, he's taller, but I'm telling you, my mother, she's in charge. Okay, he's giving mussar. You say to your master, and obviously there's a lot being taught over here in this very obscure mincha shai that says the word ha'oimrois does not make sense. There's some very deep message here in the word oimrois. It's not, there's the mesik here, this doesn't belong here. It's so unique, it only appears something like this once in seven times. So there's... Mincha Shai, you have Mincha Shai, tell him?
Yeah. I looked it up.
It says Ladonehem. Hey, I don't see it.
I saw it, but I looked it up.
Oh, I looked it up, I don't find it.
What are you talking about? Kuflam and Hey plus a K.
Okay.
And then it's again, and the Mincha Shai says, look also.
Gotta look at the Mikros Kedolos.
It's the same thing.
Mincha Shai called Tehillim, not Tehillim.
So there are different ways. We're brainwashed.
Yeah,
Tehillim.
No. I met a lot of people.
Tehillim.
We have a
Gemara is... The Gemara, I think the Gemara only says Tehillim. Tehillim. Does not say Tehillim without the hay.
I know a lot of people that refer to it.
For some reason, I don't know. What?
This has two yuds. This Tehillim has two yuds, right?
No, it's the mess on the vote.
Hey. No, the yuds mean nothing. The yuds don't mean nothing. The hay. The Gemara, the Talmud Bavli, when it refers to Sefer Tehillim, if I'm not mistaken, calls it Tehillim without the hay.
Tehillim.
Tehillim. Why do we pronounce it Tehillim? I do not know. Tehillim?
Tehillim.
Tehillim, without the A.
What it says in the Mishnah Shai says the same thing.
What is the word?
But
Ladone,
here.
Yeah.
No, not the word Omros. It's Posike Va'adonenu.
I don't have the line.
Yeah, sure you do.
I have a good.
Oh, so you don't have
va.
A good
But no, not on the Aleph, not on the Aleph, on the Vav. What happened
on the
Vav?
Vav.
No, no, he's
no,
saying
the
Neseg.
On the Vav.
The Neseg is no, not in the right place.
I understanding of this, but I have no understanding.
I'm not understanding.
There's an Aleph with a line
under it.
No Aleph with a line under it like it is right here.
You have Aleph. Now, before the Aleph, under the Vav, the Patach of the Vav, the Vav, right? It's Va.
Which word now?
Va'adonenu. Pasuke.
I have the Va'adonenu, but it's not
so this doesn't have good grammar.
It doesn't have the mark that the Aleph here has.
Mark, it has it. In here, it doesn't have a line under the Va.
Under the Jew. Oh, yours does?
Yes.
Okay.
So this is not a good.
Close it up. Bring it back to Rabbi Zalman.
That's it.
Show me this.
Yeah.
That the back, you
and
can't
again,
bring a raya.
The next parak, it's again, he brings it down. Look up
you
the next.
You cannot bring a raya from the Tehillim in the back of a sitter.
Yeah.
Okay?
No, that's true.
Don't bring me a raya from the Tehillim. Okay. Back of a sitter. Take out a good Mikroyos Gedolos, then we can talk. We can negotiate. Okay. It's not the Aleph in that pasuk. It's the Meseg.
The word has an additional line.
Right.
So that's
not
what our Aleph has. Our Aleph doesn't have that.
It's not the Aleph. It's the Meseg. A Meseg is a little line which adds emphasis. Not on the Aleph. On the beginning of the word. The beginning of the word. The word, the emphasis you give a word. Let me clarify. When in Hebrew, when you give emphasis to a word, you give emphasis to the last syllable. Okay, take any word. Vinishte. Okay, the word over there. Vinishte. There, how many syllables are? Vinishte. There are three syllables in the word vinishte. Vinish.
But any of those big words have a breakup. They have to, if you look in the laning, you'll have long words are going to have a messing under an early part, so you make a partial accent on. Break it up to
every word, you have to break up
with the pronunciation because the next letter is going to be a silent letter and then you're going to lose it. You're going to say, Va'adonenu, the Aleph gets lost.
Okay, so correct. Every word, the emphasis by default is on the last syllable.
And that's why there's no accent mark there. It's on the exceptions.
Right, so then there are exceptions where we put the emphasis on usually the second to last syllable. It's very rare to put the emphasis on the first syllable if you have three syllables. Here, just look on the page. Vinishte. How many syllables are there? Three. Vi. The second syllable, two letters. Nish. Nun and the shin, they go together. Nish. The third syllable is te. Two letters. Tof hey. Vinishte. Now, you can pronounce this one of three ways. V'nishte, v'nishte, v'nishte. What is the correct way to pronounce the word? Like the Israelis, v'nishte. The Yeshivish people, they say v'nishte. They say the second v'nishte. That's wrong. And many times when you put the emphasis on the wrong syllable, it changes the meaning of the word. Ba'a versus ba'a. Rashi and Chumash. V'rochel ba'a. Verse ba'a, either it means the present tense or it means in the past tense. If you change put the emphasis on the wrong syllable, you can do great damage to the meaning of the word. The reason why the B'nai Torah, it's clear as day, why all the B'nai Torah are all mixed up and have a very hard time saying the words correctly, is because we all come from a generation of parents and grandparents and great-grandparents and great-great-grandparents that spoke a fluent Yiddish. Everyone has Yiddish blood in them, whether they like it or not, somewhere along the line. In Yiddish, Every single word. B'li yoytze min haklal, the emphasis is on the first syllable. The first syllable. So let's take an example. We're going through grammar. Is it Shabbos or Shabbos?
Shabbos.
Two, there are two syllables. Shabbos. It's a simple word, two syllables. Shabbos. How? What is the correct way? Where do you put the emphasis on a Hebrew word?
Right.
On the last syllable. Right. It's not the last letter. It's called the last syllable because the last syllable can be even three letters sometimes. The last syllable is bos. So it's shabos. Good shabos. Good G-O-D-D-K in English. Or shabos tof. Shabos shalom. It's shabos.
Shalom.
How come all of the B'nai Torah can do that? They just cannot get their brains to say that, and they say Shabbos, 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 because they come from a generation where their parents spoke to them in Yiddish. And in Yiddish, every single word, the emphasis is on the first syllable. And it even comes out in English. Someone who never learned, someone, a Yiddish fellow who never really spoke a good English, and then he learned some fancy words, and he speaks to you in English, he puts the emphasis always on the beginning of the word,
it's
not
the
where...
On the wrong syllable.
In Yiddish, it's the beginning. So I once spoke to someone, and he told me I'm dead wrong. I used to always tell people that to say Shabbos is correct. Because Shabbos is the Yiddish way of saying Shabbos. So when you say good Shabbos, you're like saying, have a nice Sabbath. In English, we say Sabbath. And in Hebrew, we say Shabbos. And in Yiddish, you say Shabbos. So someone said to me, you don't know what you're talking about. There's no such thing in Yiddish as saying Shabbos. I don't know if he says, it's Shabbos is not a Yiddish word.
No, that's right.
It's not a Yiddish word.
No,
Shabbos is only a Hebrew word. And there's no such thing as that if you say Shabbos, it's correct in a Yiddish vocabulary. So how do you say that in Yiddish, good Shabbos? I don't know, he didn't tell me. But he told me, I don't know what I'm talking about, there's no such thing.
Yiddish always takes words from other languages.
Okay, so he used to be a pretty big mumche in Yiddish. He seemed to be a mumche in Yiddish, this fellow. I don't know, I have to check into it more. But over here, just reading off the track, we have over here a very unusual expression. Ha-oimrois. The word over here is Shvi Ha'oim Rois. It's how Ha'oim. Really, the truth is, it's a Shva Na. So, how many syllables are there? Ha, O is one complete syllable because it's a Shva Na. It's a Cholam. A Shva followed by a Cholam becomes an independent syllable. So, it's Ha, O, Me, Rois. Four syllables. There are four syllables in this word. Where, by default, do you put the emphasis? On the last syllable. Ha-o-mi-ros. 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 That's the correct way to pronounce the word. However, we have something bizarre. We have here a neseg, or what's called a makof. A little line, a vertical line, underneath
right.
The aleph, which tells us, no. In this word, don't say ha-oy-me-rois. I want you to put emphasis also equal emphasis on the aleph. Ha-oy-me-rois.
You have a lot of words in the Chumash like that.
Okay, but here it's unusual because of the certain rules of grammar which I am not familiar with.
What about the ha-oy-shikos and the ha-rois itself right before it?
No, though it would appear that those are not unusual words because in those instances, I told you, I don't know grammar, nothing about grammar. Those words, it belongs there. The Mincha Shai is the Mumcha. He explains it in Tehillim in much more detail. In those words, the ayin, yeah, but the Mincha Shai says that this word is unique. It's one of seven unique words because it doesn't belong. Why does it not belong? Emphasis on the aleph does not belong.
Because you could say ha-om-ros.
Why does it belong by the ayin?
Because that's a resh. It's a different type of letter. A resh, an aleph is a vowel. An aleph is not a real letter. An aleph is not a real letter. Aleph, hey, vav, and yud.
The letter in pronunciation, the
Aleph, Hey, Vav, and Yod are not real letters. I don't mean to insult them. Mechilas Kvoichem. Aleph, Hey, Vav, Yod. Ayin is a guttural sound. It's not really an aleph. Whatever you're supposed to say.
According to the Mincha Shai, you have to pronounce it Ha'oimerais.
Both, no, oy. Double. Ha'oi me Royce.
Okay. The word to the voice is translated in modern Hebrew to wrap around your finger.
What? Say it again?
When you want to say you wrap someone around
your
finger.
Oh, so you see?
You say
Seivais. Seivais, and then what's the year?
That's what it means, to wrap around.
Seivais. And what's with the aleph you say? With aleph?
Oi. Oi. When she talks, oi.
Okay. Mr. Platnik, do you understand what I'm saying? You understand what I'm saying over here? The letter resh, it belongs. The letter ayin, it belongs. These are real letters. This is a Cadillac. They get their meseg. They deserve it. The aleph doesn't deserve a meseg. Aleph, hey, vav, yud are weak letters. They don't deserve a meseg. So what is it doing here?
Was the ayin originally pronounced?
Yeah. The briskers, they still do the shma. I can't do it. Sit next to a brisker, you'll laugh your head off.
The leftovers are from like the word.
I have no clue what they're saying. Yanko. Yankee.
Where's the end sound? Because the ayin has an end. The end. That's how it's left over.
The New York Yankees. Why are they called the Yankees? Where did the end come from? I'm telling you this honest, and it's not a joke. Yeah, sure. The New York Yankees, because Yankees come from Yaakov. And it's not Yaakov, the ayin is not son, it's Yankov. There's an N, the English letter N should be pronounced, ideally, in the letter ayin. Otherwise, there's no difference between an ayin and an aleph. Now, most of us don't differentiate, but this is... Yes, yes, yes. Correct. And that's the New York Yankees. That, where does it come from? There's no doubt about it. It goes back to Yaakov Avinu. The New York Yankees goes back to Yaakov, and it's with an N. That's why it's the Yankees, with an N. Okay, so therefore, the Ayin deserves a Mesek. The Reish deserves a Mesek. The Aleph in Ha'oimerois does not. It does not deserve a mesek. So what is it doing there? So the Minhag HaShai says that's right, it doesn't belong there, and it's one of seven exceptions in the entire Tanakh where there's going to be a letter Aleph, Hey, Vav, Yud that will get a mesek that it does not deserve. The Pasuk he quotes in Tehillim, Tehillim has a Vav. There's a Vav, Va'adonehem. What is the Vav getting a Mesek for? The Vav is one of the four letters that he does not deserve a Mesek. So that's exception number two. What are the other five exceptions? I don't know. Now, in every rule, there's the rule of Pshat, and there's also another dimension of Drush. There's Drush. The fact that this word over here is getting a Mesek that it does not deserve, you'll tell me all this technical information why this should be one of the seven exceptions. I give in to you. You'll write a whole book explaining technically we have to make an exception here in this word to give the Aleph its own Mesek. But when you learn the Pshat in the Pasuk, and it's telling you that we're dealing over here with some women who are very difficult customers, women who are very demanding, they are causing their wives, their husbands to go out and make a parnasa, and they're calling them their masters, and there's no actual speech. It's, as Mitsudos in the Radak says, it's misavev. Oh, so you mean it doesn't mean they literally say to their husband, I want you to go and kill someone. I want you to go and rob and cheat on the taxes. They never said those words. They created an environment. It's a different type of amira. Oh, so now things begin to click together.
begins to click together. It's not just that this line over here is only here due to some technical reason which only a genius and Einstein can understand why the rules of grammar here are changed to put the aleph. There's also a drush. There's also a recognition that there's something different about this amira. It's not a real amira, it's mesaviv kol hasibos. That's what I wanted to point out. I didn't realize it would take so long to go through that point. Okay, but anyway, hopefully we learned something from discussing this. Let's finish up the Radak.
Can I just say something?
Yes.
This discussion of the where the accents go, we have this word, harotzesos, in this pasuk. And I know it's supposed to mean crushed and that's you know, shattered, crushed is a common translation. And I've been wondering why it's not translated that way in last week's Parsha, but it's Rotsitsu Habonim Dikirba, right? Which means they were running around or they were...
Lust ruts, Raj, they were running.
Tangling, not crushing.
Not crushing.
So crush and Yaakov, one second. And what we... Because it's been Rotsitsu bugging me, and now I see... The accent is by its rotsitsu in Toldos, but normally when it means crush, it means harotsitsos.
Ah, very good. So what's the answer? You're saying very, very good. The answer is, what does Rashi say there on that pasuk? Rotsitsu miloshen rots.
Right.
Where do they want to run? When Rivka passed the Beis Medrash, Yaakov wanted to run into the Beis Medrash. When she passed the base of Avodah Zarah, Esav wanted to run. Rots has only one tzadi.
Right.
Rots means to run. To run.
Right.
Ritzitza, to crush, has two tzadis.
Right.
So there's another tzadi. So there is no emphasis on the second tzadi. It's just there for padding.
Yeah.
That's why it's Miloshon, running. Here, there is an emphasis on the second tzadi. It's a different word.
Yeah.
It's not the same word. And you see the emphasis, the Tameh HaMikra, goes upon that letter to bring out the point that the shorish of this word is Reish Tzadi Tzadi.
Which explains
the different pshat in the pasuk. Excellent. And many times we learn in Farshim that you see they argue what is the exact shorish, and that also has an impact on where do you put the emphasis, what their tradition was, where the emphasis go. I used to teach laning for bar mitzvah boys. So one of the techniques I use is you have to teach a bar mitzvah boy. They swallow up words. Wait a minute. Stop here. I would test them. How many syllables are there in a word? Like last week's parasha was a great example. Rivka says to Yaakov, Olai kililosecha b'ni. So that's the hardest word in the parasha. Why so hard? Because it's a hard word. So you take that word, and I tell the boy, how many syllables are there in this word, kilolosha? There are five. Ki, le, la, se, cha. It's a, why? Let me explain. The first lamed is a shva na, which means, so therefore it's not kill, K-I-L-L, as in murder. It's ki, stop. The lamed is a shva na. Ki, le, then comes a komatz, law. It's not loss, because a komatz, there's an emphasis on the word, on that lamed, it's a ketunua gedola, which means the next, the soft, is also a shva, na. So it's ki, le, la, se, cha. Five syllables. That's very rare. You don't have a word, you don't often have a word that has five syllables. Three is probably average.
It's a small word also. It's not such a big
small
word.
So people who don't know, they'll say, kilosecha. They'll kilosecha. They'll swallow the word in
they'll
the most...
The
they'll kill the word. They'll swallow the word in the most bizarre ways. What were you thinking? I don't know. It's a short word. It can't be that you have to spend so much time saying this word. It doesn't make sense, right? The average person is not familiar with this type of stuff. You know, a little few letters over there. Kiloscha, you know, I don't even know what they say. What? No, because it's too hard. And you have to teach the class to the Hamoinam. You can't go teach details. Most kids can't. It's too hard. So they never end up learning this. But I used to teach the Bible words. There are five syllables. Ki, le, la, se, cha. It's like Achashverosh. Just because, don't be deceived by the small space it takes up. In your mind plays games with you. The small little word, so you just, it has to be, I can't spend so much time, I have to swallow it up. No, you don't realize, sometimes you have a teeny little word, it's going to take you a lot of time to get it out of your mouth correctly. And people appreciate it. So when you listen to one lady and you hear them say it the way it's supposed to be said, it makes an impression. Ki le lo se ha. A little bit faster than that, but I was to test them. Where are the syllables? When they know there are five syllables, and you go to the five syllables, it's a whole different ballgame. And then you have to know, well, where do you put the emphasis? So there in that word, alai ki le lo se ha, it's on the lamed. I believe there's a message on this, it's a true gedol, a message on the lamed. Alai ki le lo se ha. On the lamed, not at the end, not on the last. Normally, by default, it's the last syllable. It's not kilolosecha. It's kilolosecha. Five syllables and put the emphasis in the right place. It makes all the difference. So, okay, those are some examples. We learned some grammar today. I think it was Kedai. We don't waste time. We learned grammar over here. And with this pasuk over here, what the Nashon trying to do. But the finish learning the Radak and then we're going to stop. Turn the radak, which is the radak. So back to pasuk Aleph Shema Haparos Abashim. We just go drop down. Ha'ishka is dalim. Shem is sadabais. Okay, the second line. Ha'ishka v'hamirutza. She'ema is ladanem. Shem ba'alayen. They say to their masters who are their husbands. Ha'viv nishte. V'me'en l'ba'alayim ha'kesef mishalachem ha'zmana. If they don't have it prepared, they don't have the money in the bank. What do? Oishkim ha'chalushim. They oppress the weak. She'ein lohem koyach lihimolet miyadam. They do not have any strength. The weak do not have any power to escape. Gam roitzitzim oitzim. They crush them. They rip them apart. Im lo yidnu miyad al pihem. If they do not give the money immediately. Roitzitzitz. The Radak is very big into translations. Inyan shevira. It means to destroy. Kmo konerotzutz. A reed that has been beaten. There's an expression. Rakef, you always like to say this. An oiske klapte hashana.
Yeah.
Is that how you say it in Yiddish? Oiske klapte hashana. That's what it means. A koner rotzutz.
Something worthless.
Worthless, like you're a shaft.
Kick those via oiske klapte hashana.
Kaloima makim oisam. They turn them into a chopped liver. If they don't pay up, they give the money right away. Next words, the expatriates of the Radak, Ladu Nehem. Ha aleph no'o bachatov patoch. The aleph, okay, is. This is a different word by side. This is not ha'imrois. Okay, we're on a different word now. This is achatav patach. I had a, actually we were fasting. You should have been there in Shalashuris. And Rabbi Shivichul is a big mumchen in Diktuk. His name is Binyamin Levitz. Rabbi Levitz, he davens over here. He davens here in the shul pretty often, the Moichas Swarm. So he has a son. His name is Rabbi Binyamin. He's an unbelievable Baal Kriya. He's top. He's just out of this world. Not as good as Rabbi Yevsky. But no, close. Close. Okay. But he's an incredible Baal Diktuk. So we were discussing with Rabbi, I mentioned you there, the rabbi was listening there with great intensity to this conversation. The rabbi is a Hasidish, a real Hasidish fellow. He's a spink, one of the spinker rabbis, but he learned in Long Beach and he likes to lane. And because the oilam there are all Litvaks, he lanes a Litvish laning. There, no, when he lanes, he doesn't say he says he lanes like a real Litvak with all the diktuk and all the, and he's very into diktuk. He really enjoys diktuk and he practices diktuk, even though it's very bizarre. Chassidish Rebbe with the strimal and the whole levush is a Rebbe, a Sphinx Rebbe. He's fully into the Litvish Mahalach and diktuk. So I mentioned, remember yesterday, there you told me that if you lane by Rav Moshe Feinstein, Aroin, he would stop you.
Yeah,
and would make you lane to say the word again, Aharoin.
I can tell you that first bit.
Right. I said that to you in your name. So they were very fascinated by this. So why are they very fascinated? Because the hey, in every time it says the word Aharoin, this is exactly what's in the Radak, much from the TikTok, the hey, every time it says the word Aharoin in the Torah, is what's called a chataf patach. It's not a regular horizontal line. It's horizontal line with two dots. With two dots. Now, what does that mean? So I told him what everyone, the world, I know from that, I'm an Aretz D'Araisa in Diktuk. So I said, when you have a chat of patach, what does it mean? It means you're supposed to do a patach, a little faster. a little fast. Every time you have a letter, a vowel with two dots on the right side, say the letter with that vowel, but do it a little faster. So therefore, the Olam, so I said to him, so the Olam, since he's supposed to do the hey faster than you do every other letter, and the hey doesn't really have any sound, so it becomes Aharon. You're going to start saying, if you say it slow, Aharon. So you said the patach of the hey too slow. And you were instructed, because of the two dots, you should say a little faster. So say it faster. When you start saying it too fast a couple of times, it disappears. So that's why many Bali Kriya, they just say Aaron. Moshe v'Aaron. V'Aaron. They completely omit the hay. By accident, on purpose. I don't know what they're doing. Who knows what they're doing? And no one's going to stop them. Someone's going to lay in Moshe v'Aaron. V'Aaron. You don't even say the hay. No one's going to stop you. Rav Moshe, stop. Rav Mayavsky, stop. This is Mevaziv. Stop. You're not landing right. It's Aharon. So he says, I said to him, Mistam, why did Rav Moshe do that? Mistam, Rav Moshe felt that if you can't do it fast and pronounce it, better do it slow and pronounce it. It's the lesser of the two evils. So Binyamin Levin, he says to me, I hear what you're saying, and that's what the Olam says, but you're wrong. Let me tell you the pshat. He says, there's no such thing as the two dots means to say it faster. It does not exist. Anyone that tells you this, they say faster, is just the Baba Maisa. What you're supposed to say, the full pronunciation, like Rav Moshe says, Aharon. Why then are there two dots? He says to me, the truth is, this is not a real patach. This is a shva.
Right.
The letter he is two dots. What kind of shva is it? A shva noch.
Right.
Not a shva no, it's the end. So if you have a shva noch on a he, what happens to the he? It disappears. How do you do a shva noch on a he? That's really an aleph. So because the letter is going to disappear, this is what it deserves. Why? Misinai, the hey deserves a shva noch. Aleph of the patach, hey a shva noch, resh cholam nun. Aaron. But if you're going to do it what it really deserves, the letter will disappear into thin air. Gesundheit.
Like it does in English.
So therefore, Chazal said, you can't do that. If you're going to follow the rules, then the letter's going to disappear. But the Torah put a letter there. So we have no choice but to transform it into a patach. But in order that you should know that this is not the real vowel, it really started out as a shva. But because the shva is going to disappear, so Chazal said it's going to disappear. We have no choice but in this. The Torah wants us to pronounce. We have to give it an improvised sound. It's not a real sound. We're going to give it a different sound that it doesn't really deserve, because if we're not going to give it a sound, then it's not going to exist. But it's not equivalent to the other vowels, which are giving the real sound, the real vowel. So that's all it means. It was meant to be a shva noch. But because the shva noch, you're not going to hear it. And we have to hear it, we make it into a patach. Once you make it into a patach, so pronounce it like a patach. Aharon. Who told you to say it faster? So he claimed to me, there's no such thing as saying a letter faster than another letter. No such thing. And this, the Olam says, chatav patach, because they don't know what they're talking about. The true pshat is, it's a hey with a shva noch. A hey with a shva noch has no sound. You have to give it sound. When you give it sound, Chazal gave it a patach sound. So it's Aharon. Rav Moshe insisted, you say Aharon, and if you leave out the hey, you're not saying the word. Okay, but in our vernacular, colloquial expression, we call our friends Aharon. I don't think we say Aharon, come here. You're not going to hear that. Unless it's some computer-generated voice which follows the rules, but
in English they spell it A. That's what I said.
A. How do they spell it?
H.
They don't spell it an H.
No.
Some do. Some do. So now that we know that, let's look at this last radak, this last line. La Adonehem, ho aleph. Look at the aleph of this word. Look, you see the aleph over here as a chatav patach. Because really, what is the aleph? The aleph is la. It's a shvanoch. It's a shvanoch. There's no pronunciation. The aleph disappears off the face of the earth. Ha aleph no'ah is expressed bechatav patach. It turns into la adonehem. The aleph is going to be pronounced as a patach, but it's not a real sound.
So you see what that means? It means they're really not adonehem.
It's not a real aleph.
Yeah.
V'echad mishiva.
It softens. Then.
It's one of seven she'ein ma'pik b'lashoyin adnos. So over here, wait a minute. Over here, he's referring over here not to the oimros. He's referring to a different pachat. I see that's another issue. Why is there an aleph by the oimros? Okay, there are two different issues over here. There's the aleph, the nesek by the oimros, and this is an entirely different issue. Maybe that's what the Minchas Shas is referring to. I thought he was referring to the oimros. I'm not so sure what the Messiah is over here. Ha aleph no la b'chad. The Radak clearly is focusing on the word la adonehem. V'hu echad mishiva shehein ma'pik b'lashoyin adnus. Okay, so therefore, an adoin is really. So now we say, I think what he's saying over here, at least the Radak is saying that really it should get a full patach. It really should get a full patach for real, because they're masters. But exactly what Rabbi Michal says, they're not real masters; they're slaves. So therefore, that's why we take away the patach, we give it a shva, and then we have to go backwards to give it a sound. Okay, so therefore. I could be everything I told you before is a mistake. I'm not so sure to what I said is a mistake. Yeah, maybe it's just it's not unique. It's not unique. But going back, what it says over here, ha'oimerois, the emphasis, that's not what the Mincha Shai is referring to. Right. The Mincha Shai is referring to the chatav patach on the word la adonehem. I made a mistake, and that's I thought that I was referring to ha'oimerois. I made a mistake. The Mincha Shai is not referring to the Ha'omeros. But even though I made a mistake, there is still a lot to be said about the Neseg under the Ha'omeros, the double emphasis. That is also unique. I don't go back on that. That has to be studied, because it's one of those four letters which generally does not get emphasis, and we have to go through it, understand what the reason is for. But that's not what the Mincha Shai is referring to. He's referring to the chatav patach underneath the letter aleph. La Adonehem, it should have a regular patach, a master. But being that over here, for whatever reason, we don't want to get called a master, so we have a chatav patach, it's not a real aleph. And the aleph, the sound is only improvised, so it should not disappear. Okay, we'll stop here.